Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
Where you stand?
LA living grid locked in the fast lane. Trying to strike a rich match, play my cash game. At least a couple degrees from the coast where they got bunnies and bricks swimming in the sea.
Here on the Fansmanship.com podcast with from egrizz.com, Brent Wahlberg. Brent, what's going on?
Not much, Owen. Glad to be part of this. Thanks for reaching out to me. Happy to be here.
Yeah. I've always wanted to have better connections with the Big Sky. You know, it's a lot easier when it's in-state in the Big West for Cal Poly, when, you know, most of the teams are in-state here in California, but there's only three California teams in the Big Sky, and, you know, most of the heart of the conference is, you know, up in kind of the Rocky Mountain region, the Big Sky region, I guess you could really call it. And so I wanted to, you know, I've been wanting to have people from places like Montana and Montana State and, you know, some of the original Big Sky Conference members and fans kind of give us a little bit of different perspective on what the conference looks like from their perspective and what Cal Poly looks like from their perspective too. Sometimes, you know, everybody gets wrapped up in their own ball of yarn, and it's kind of nice to have a little bit of a different perspective on a football team and a football conference like the Big Sky for sure.
Yeah.
I wanted to start off, tell me a little bit about yourself, Brent Wahlberg. Any relation to Donnie or Mark, and how long have you lived in Montana and been a Montana fan for?
Yeah. So, sadly no relation to any of the well-known Wahlbergs. I'm actually, I'm born and raised here in Missoula. I've called no other place home.
Nice.
My parents actually came out here from Wisconsin. My dad attended grad school in the early 70s, and they stayed ever since. So, you know, for me, I attended the University of Montana. It's kind of funny because, for a lot of Montana kids, you grew up, and in the fall, you were out in the woods hunting. For me, I grew up in... for a little while it was called Dornblaser, a different stadium. That was until the mid-80s, and then Washington Grizzly Stadium, where the Grizz play currently. So I grew up watching football. It was Grizz on Saturdays, and it was Packers as best we could on Sundays. So I grew up pretty much a football guy. Grizz football is something that's just a big passion of mine. I'm a real estate agent here in town, but I attend both the spring camps and the pre-fall camps and do a lot of blogging and posting and sharing of information on Grizz and our opponents and all sorts of stuff like that.
Yeah, egrizz.com, for those of you Cal Poly supporters who are listening, is a great place to look for both like content in terms of blogs, like you said, Brent, but also a nice discussion forum. You know, Cal Poly has some forums like the Yuku one that they do, and you know, blogs like mine, like ours here, but at fansmanship.com. But having kind of both of them in one place is a super handy deal. I was talking with J.D. Scroggin, who's the Cal Poly beat writer for our local paper here, the San Luis Obispo Tribune, and he was telling me about, and I don't think it was at Montana, but you mentioned being out in the woods, and it made me think about a story that there were a ton of guys who showed up to the game a little bit late because it was hunting season. I feel like it was maybe South Dakota State or North Dakota somewhere where it was the start of some kind of like pheasant hunting or some kind of bird hunting season. And so everybody showed up in their hunting gear and or at the hotel, you know, with all of their hunting stuff going on, wherever they were. Is that something that you see sometimes in Montana there?
Yeah, you see it from time to time. You might even see something where someone might have an animal in the bed of the truck, and maybe they're going to – we don't see that too often, but you hear the stories, definitely. Yeah, especially once it starts to get cold. You see the Hunter Orange, the camo, the coveralls, that kind of stuff. That definitely shows up once it starts cooling down here. Absolutely.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. Yeah. I can definitely picture that. So, tell me a little bit about, the Montana fan base. It seems like it's kind of the best fan base, one of the better fan bases in FCS, if not the best. You guys average 25,000 fans a game, you know, really, you know, the way I look at it, Montana is, you know, a borderline FBS team. Describe the fan base there and kind of how seriously the fans take, football.
Oh yeah, it is a great fan base. I think Washington Grizzly Stadium, where the Grizz play, is the largest FCS. Well, I don't know if it's the largest stadium. I think some like the Yale Bowl and a few others are bigger, but we definitely have the highest attendance.
So totally,
all our games are pretty much sellouts, over 25,000 people pretty frequently at all the games. It's a great crowd. It's a great atmosphere. Missoula, Montana, 68,000 people, roughly in the city limits, about 100,000 in the whole county. We're packed in here, and we don't have a lot of other, you know, nearby major sports. So it's all about the Grizz here. And so you see the maroon and silver everywhere, and basically the conversation everywhere you go on Monday is, you know, how about that game? And so what you see is we've got a fan base, I think, that's pretty dialed in. You go to a lot of areas, a lot of larger areas, that's a little bit more of a passive fan base. But here in Missoula, it's definitely a very loyal and a very attentive fan base. You know, everyone's got their handful of bad eggs and stuff like that, but it is kind of nice. I think
nice.
A lot of people talk about, they come out here, like they come to a Grizz game and they love the hospitality and everyone's so nice to them, and they have a great time and they want to return. I think I've even had this conversation with Cal Poly fans over the years. Before Cal Poly joined the Big Sky, I think they had three or four games in a row where they played here in Missoula over the course of maybe 4 or 5 years. And a lot of their fans were like, you guys got to come down to San Luis Obispo. We got to stop, you know, but they're just real friendly people, really enjoy coming up, but we really like to, you know, do more home and homes. And then of course, Cal Poly joins the Big Sky. And
right.
So now we're conference route.
Well, and being in a stadium that seats over twice as many people as our stadium seats, and a place that's going to sell out 25,000 seats. You know, I think I was at the Colorado State Cal Poly game last season when I don't think there were 25,000 fans there. I think there were about 17. Of course, there were floods going on that weekend in Colorado, so you know, I don't blame them. But you know, probably from a revenue standpoint, I would imagine, you know, two games in Montana, you're going to make more money than if you did a home and home, for instance, possibly, you know, if you're Cal Poly. Speaking of Cal Poly playing in Montana, were you at that game last year? I was told by somebody, actually a parent of a Montana player, that it was the greatest game he's ever seen, just football game period, that he's ever witnessed. Were you at that game? And tell me a little bit about it. I know I watched it on TV, and the end was just brutal for Cal Poly fans.
Yeah, so I'm a season ticket holder. I have missed two Grizzly home games since 1993, when I was 13 years old. So,
nice.
Yes, I was at that game. I was biting my nails off the whole time because it was definitely, it was kind of one of these games where, you know, both our defenses did just enough, and it was kind of one of these things. I was convinced Poly had that game. I mean, you guys were lining up to kick the game winner. And the interesting story, so of course the combo that came together to block, but would have, you know, sealed the deal, because then the kick gets blocked, the Grizz go down and score, we get to overtime, and then, so yeah. The two players that came together was Brock Coyle, who is now a linebacker for the Seattle Seahawks, and Jordan Tripp, who's a linebacker for the Miami Dolphins. Tripp was drafted. Coyle was a free agent signing and stayed on the roster and is now backs up Bobby Wagner. So on an extra point earlier, they noticed something. And so they were telling the line coach there's a weakness in the side of the line. So they schemed and planned exactly for what they did. And, I was sitting there, I think it was a game, I kind of had this joke with my father-in-law, him and I go to one or two games every year. And it seems like the ones we go to are just these down to the wire, barn burner type games. We've seen some incredible ones together. And so I remember joking with him at that game that I got to stop bringing him to these games because they're way too close. But no, it was, in terms of games I've seen in Washington Grizzly, I think if you ask a lot of Grizz fans, there was a playoff game in 2009 against Appalachian State that was hands down one of the greatest football games I've ever seen. For me personally, I would put a playoff game in 94 with McNeese and then actually two different games, both with Cal Poly. We had an incredible defensive struggle, one in 06, I think it was, and then this one was right up there.
Was the 06 game a game that Cal Poly won?
No.
Okay. I feel like there was a game, and maybe it was Montana State and not Montana, but that I hear about where a third string quarterback from Cal Poly came in and pulled it out for them somewhere.
So I think in 05, we played Poly twice in 05.
Okay.
And we beat them in the regular season game, and it was kind of one of these games, I don't know. We just kind of stretched out in the fourth quarter. It wasn't anything really memorable. But then you guys came back and played us in the first round of playoffs, and you smoked us. Like, I think you beat us by 21 or 28 points.
Wow.
And it was, I think the Grizz that year came into the game kind of assuming they were going to see the same Cal Poly they played 2 months before and just got knocked flat on their back.
Yeah. Speaking of kind of what people think of Cal Poly, I'm always interested from outsiders in terms of like how is Cal Poly perceived, whether it's in a conference or whether it's just by people who've played them, in the past and in Montana's case, it's both. How is a team like Cal Poly perceived? The triple option is always something that for some people is kind of a point of contention here in San Luis Obispo. Some people really hate it and want to dog on it. It's really hard to get into Cal Poly, and it's really hard to get even, some athletes in here too sometimes. And so, for a lot of people with that premise, the triple option seems like a really good, option for an offense. But how does that all play out when you're an opposing fan, kind of getting ready to watch your team play against Cal Poly?
Well, let's see. I mean, Clinton Poly always, as a fan and someone who scouted, who tries to do some blogging and some scouting on it, excuse me, it stresses me out just because Poly's offense, I mean, you just don't see that with other teams in the Big Sky. So you represent something definitely unique. You see a lot of spread or pro set type stuff.
Right.
So it's kind of interesting. The funny thing that I see is before Cal Poly joined the Big Sky, I remember a lot of my friends and I, we were always, because Poly and Montana played quite frequently before, because it was a nearby non-conference FCS game that we could book.
Right.
We were, we weren't like fans of Cal Poly, but it was like after we played you guys, it was like, let's go, because we were always fans of getting more teams in the West in the playoffs. And so I kind of always remember, years where Cal Poly would lose like just one or two games and they'd have a pretty good resume, but they'd still not make the playoffs. We always felt that, give Poly some love here.
Yeah.
But now that you guys are in conference, I got to tell you, I think to the recent games that we've had, and most all of them have been close and tense and down to the wire.
Yeah.
That triple option's hard to prepare for. I think a lot of fans that I talk to, there's a definite amount of respect there. I think, there's certain schools, of course, in our area that we feel a real intense rivalry against.
Montana State?
Yeah, MSU. We call them Bozeman State. And Eastern Washington, a little lesser. They think we're their main rivals, but we have one rival. But, we view them as well, too.
Yeah. They're really good.
But with Cal Poly, I mean, you guys usually have a real solid defense that gives the Grizz fits quite a bit. And then that triple option, man, that's the only one that does it in the Big Sky. So it makes it, I guess you got Portland State's goofy stuff. But
yeah,
I kind of view Cal Poly is a little bit more unique than Portland State.
It's the real true triple option. And to your point about the defense, you know, I think that game they played in Missoula last year, you know, was and I haven't been following Cal Poly football closely for that many years, but for me that was as good as I've seen that defense play. Their three linebackers last year, and two of them are back, but between Millard and DeZubnar and Anko last year, you know, between those three guys, you know, Millard's in the FXFL right now trying to make his way. He had camp with the Rams this year. DeZubnar leads the nation in tackles right now, and Anko honestly is probably the most athletic one out of all of them. He's the guy who kind of makes them not necessarily need a nickel back when other teams go to kind of an offensive set that would need a nickel. He's a guy who's covering slot receivers and running, you know, sideline to sideline and making plays. He was a transfer from Wisconsin when he came out here. You know, those three linebackers last year, you know, I think were just so underrated. And I look at last year's Cal Poly team that went 6-6 overall. I'm not sure what their record in the Big Sky was off the top of my head, because at some point it just became, well, you know, let's try to get to 500. But that team is a blocked extra, or essentially a blocked PAT, right, in Missoula, and a kickoff return against Northern Arizona. They took the lead at the end of the third quarter. I think it was 17-14 or 14-10. Northern Arizona runs the kickoff back at Cal Poly, and nobody scores the rest of the game. So Northern Arizona beat them on a return kickoff. Cal Poly lost to Montana, you could say, on a you know, essentially an extra point field goal that they missed, and your two extra, you know, special teams plays away from being, instead of 6-6, being 8-4 and having, you know, a legitimate Big Sky Conference, you know, record as well, being a real contender going into your last couple of games at least. Everybody here viewed last season as a real disappointment. They lost to Yale at home, which was a, you know, just a horrible game for Chris Brown and company. And then, you know, those two other losses, but you're really, you know, a really bad game and two conference, you know, close games away from being right there. And I think that's, you know, that's really the story of being in this conference. If you're going to kind of write Cal Poly's first 2.5 years of being in the Big Sky, it's a little play here and a little play there. Cal Poly's only Big Sky loss this year was Northern Arizona again, and at, you know, in Flagstaff, and again a game that came down to essentially the last play. There was an interception that it was in somebody's hands and couldn't hold on to it. So you know, I think this week's going to be just, you know, about as fun as it gets, and I don't know what else Cal Poly fans can ask for. There are some that are, you know, always grumpy about this offense, but as long as they keep putting up 500 yards a game in conference, you know, I don't know what gripes people have, whether they're running it or whether they're passing it. Last year, Dano Graves started at quarterback, I think, up in Montana. What do you guys know about Chris Brown, and like, how do you think the defense is going to be able to handle, you know, a quarterback? You know, Dano is kind of a small guy, a little bit shifty, but, you know, definitely was getting hit pretty hard. Christian Ivory was getting hit pretty hard last year. He didn't look like he was running very well. What has Montana done against, you know, fast quarterbacks, guys that can run from the quarterback position in the past this year?
Well, that's the interesting thing. We haven't played one yet.
Oh, okay.
So,
well, there you go.
That is, yeah, I look at basically the first half of the Grizzlies season. We're about seven games in now. We have predominantly played teams with big, tall pocket quarterbacks.
Got it.
That run a power pro set, something like that. Or we have not, you know, we played Davis this last weekend. And of course, Davis is running back. Manzanares is just back.
Right.
And, you know, that guy put up some pretty good yards on us. Their quarterback is a little shifty guy. Nothing like we're going to see against Cal Poly. So that's tough to say. That's one of the big, big unknowns is our defense has shown, I mean, we're best in the Big Sky.
Right.
Scoring defense.
Absolutely.
Only 18 points per game. But we've not played a lot of dynamic type offenses, and we've played a lot of pocket QB. So that's going to be the really big challenge for our defense this week?
Yeah. So if you're going to ask me, like, what's a Cal Poly weakness this, you know, this week, this year, you know, how have I seen other teams kind of prepare for Cal Poly? You know, you're going to talk about the fast paced offense that, I mean, Southern Utah, when they came into town, I mean, that thing, that was the wildest game. You know, it didn't look like either team was ever going to get a stop. It was just kind of came down to like an interception in the fourth quarter that, you know, Southern Utah was the first one to blink, essentially. I thought both teams were going to score 50 points in that one. And so I'd say, you know, Cal Poly's defense, their ability to, you know, tackle has been sometimes suspect. I think Tim Walsh this week described it as, you know, we've had some really great quarters, but we've had some really horrible quarters too, you know, in terms of how their defense has played. And I'd say, you know, that's one area, you know, of weakness. And at the beginning of the year, it hasn't happened so much lately, but their offense has really It really wasn't that dynamic. It wasn't as dynamic as the triple option needed to be until the last month or so. If teams were looking at Montana, and you watch more Montana football, as much Montana football as anybody, where do you feel like in terms of, you know, as a fan of Montana, where do you feel like their kind of weaknesses are at this point in the season?
Well, I think you don't have to go far to see what people are talking about with the challenge with Montana Grizzlies. And it comes down to our offensive line. You look at, so last year, we had the, I believe in most categories, the second best offense in the league. We returned all the same running backs, all the same running backs, save one who's out on a medical redshirt.
Mm-hmm.
All but one receiver, same quarterback. I mean, everything, it was, the stars were aligning. We were going to have, I mean, we just, every skill player was back.
Got it.
But we lost three O-linemen. Two of the three, well, three, they spent some brief stints in NFL camps. One, Danny Kistler, has practiced, no, actually two of them, and Will Pelter, both practiced a lot, I believe, Raiders and Titans.
Got it.
So we had some gaps on the O-line. So we have two interior linemen, seniors, twin brothers, Logan and Jordan Hines came in. Not a lot of starting experience, but been on the team for quite some time. And the mainstays that we were expecting to hang on to are both our tackles. That was going to be Trevor Poole and John Schmang. And both Trevor and John started the year before. So you kind of felt like you had your bookends, you had two seniors snapping in, and then Wire, our other guard, who had spot played some in different spots.
Sure,
so
sure.
It felt like things were going to be okay. Well, then all of a sudden, Trevor Poole finds he's got hemorrhaging discs in his back. I think Coach released that. His career's over. He's a senior, and John Schmang, right before the season started, was declared academically ineligible. So both your bookends and your O-line are gone. So they work in the second string guys, and neither of them really pan out too well. And so we wind up converting a guard to play right tackle, Devin Dietrich. He's our starting, and he's done a good job considering everything. And we get a tight end walk on from a junior college. We have him put on some pounds, and he's going to be our left tackle. And 2 weeks in the season, he gets a high ankle sprain. He hasn't played since. So we are playing a 19-year-old true freshman that they say he's 270. I'd be surprised if he was 255.
Right.
Talented kid. Yeah, good footwork, good hands. But, I mean, you're thrusting a pretty young guy into a pretty big job being our quarterback's, you know, blindside protector.
Yeah, so that O-line, wow. That's a ton of O-line stuff.
And so it's interesting because the Grizzlies have played three games that were all their road games, Wyoming, North Dakota State, number one team in the FCS, and North Dakota, all through a very big, aggressive, mean defensive lines. We had issues scoring. The Grizz averaged 13 points per game on the road. I mean, that's pretty bad, so to say. And we're 1-2 on the road.
So you've only played three road games all year so far?
Three road games, yeah.
Wow. Okay, so you've started off the Big Sky just at home.
Yes, we do. Nice. So, you go back to the revenue from home games in the stadium.
That's right. That's right.
Guaranteed games. Yeah.
That's right. No, absolutely. So, that's the benefit, right? I mean, that's it right there. Yeah.
So it's been interesting though, because so the Grizz had a bye week, which was a really good thing, and came back and played Davis, and defense kind of took a step back because Davis put a bit of yards up on us, but the offense put 42 points on the board. Now, granted, of course, Montana State put 77 up on the Davis defense just the week before. So,
sure.
But it was kind of encouraging. What we saw was a little bit of shift in the offensive scheme. Jordan Johnson was put more shotgun, a little pistol look, and it gave him a little bit more time than being under center because that's what appears to be the Achilles heel for the Grizz is attacking the O-line. And it's because if you can disrupt the game, and you read it in the paper every week, our head coach, we want to run the ball, we want to set the pass with the run, we want to control the clock, and if we can't run, we're looking at a lot of third and longs, and then can't protect the QB on those situations. It makes for a long day, and that's what we've seen in all three of our road games so far.
Interesting. Yeah, Cal Poly's defense is kind of a bend-but-don't-break defense. They haven't, you know, back when you were talking about when they used to play a lot, maybe middle of the last decade, their defense was more of a attacking defense. They had three straight Buck Buchanan guys with Beck and Shotwell and Gokong. And so, you know, when you're looking at this defense, it's actually kind of the opposite of that. You don't really have a ton of guys with big sack numbers or tackle for loss numbers, but there are times in quarters that this defense, you know, it's like a three and out and then punt. And, you know, they're just consistent three and outing, you know, the other team, which is, I guess, almost as good, you know, in terms of being consistent with it. You know, where do you think that plays into, you know, I guess, you know, when you talk about Montana's offense, that game last year really, you know, really, like you said, both defenses kind of bent but didn't break. And it was really just kind of a field position game for a lot of it. You know, Cal Poly got in on a couple of big plays, you know, along the way, kind of gave themselves good field position to get there. One question I wanted to ask you actually, and it has to do with Cal Poly's schedule over the next 2 weeks, because they play Montana this week and then they have Montana State at home the week after. So they got both the Montana teams, you know, back-to-back weeks, except Montana State has a bye this week. And so, so my question is, you know, how much of an advantage does a team like Montana State get having a bye, watching Cal Poly get beat up by Montana, and then being able to come in and practice for the triple option for 2 weeks? You saw Weber State have a similar setup in the Big Sky where they got a bye week and then played Cal Poly, and it's really kind of an advantage. I mean, Weber State held that offense mostly in check, especially right at the beginning of the game, and Cal Poly, I think, only put up 20, 29, 30, 31 points, something like that, on Weber State. How much of an advantage is that, and would you rather be Montana coming off a win against Davis and playing them, or would you rather be Montana State with a nice bye week before a roadie to Cal Poly?
Man, you know, with that whole bye week, it's a little bit of a double-edged sword, I think, because Montana State's in the same boat. As much as Montana was with our bye week before, pretty banged up, and having that bye week to rest up was a great thing. Montana's health is probably as good as it's going to be going into this game. But what I've noticed in a lot of situations is, you get that bye week and team comes back and boy, it's a sluggish start. I mean, we were tied 14-14 with Davis, and the offense was just looking disjointed. It was just not looking the best. Then we come out, we rattle off 28 in the next half, and things are looking better. So I think sometimes you get off that bye week and teams are a little slow getting out the gate. So in that sense, I kind of like that we've got the Davis game behind us and that the Grizz are going to be kind of hopefully feeling some better momentum, especially on offense. For Cats, you know, that's going to be interesting. You know, if you talk to some Grizz conspiracy theory people, we point out quite frequently that a lot of times, I don't know if there's actual research to this or we just like to think of this conspiracy, but that a lot of times, we play somebody in the next week, Cats play them. And that's not always the case, but you see it quite a bit. And of course, you know, the you'll see this joke on the message boards. They'll call it the Montana hangover. And we've seen situations where team gets up to beat the Grizz because they'll, you know, up until recently, just a long time, you know, win the conference every year kind of thing. And then the next week, team beats Grizz, gets on and plays Cats, and the Cats beat them.
Got it.
So that, of course, us Grizz fans, our conspiracy theory selves, and we got to justify the loss, we say, oh, it's the Montana hangover.
I love it.
Hopefully, as a Grizz fan, we won't get to be, I don't know, but you know, hopefully we're not having to talk about that in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, Cal Poly looks at this 2 weeks and says, if we can win one of these games, you know, we're going to feel really good about our chance to, you know, win one of these games and then, you know, win out in conference, which is easier said than done. But, you know, if you can do that, you go with two conference losses, you know, and four losses overall only, you know, it seems like that might be a team that does have a decent shot of making the playoffs. So I want to go a couple, you know, I guess quick hitters here at the end. How far away is Montana from becoming a FBS team? Is that something that gets you know, thrown around out there? Is that something that's that people ever talk about?
You know, it depends on who you talk to. You'll get an official statement out of athletic department that says we like where we're at right now. But you can definitely see the writing on the wall that there's plans underway. There's an academic center that has broken ground. There's talks for new locker room and weight room. There's future talks for an indoor practice facility. It definitely appears that Montana is positioning itself, but I think I don't know. It's tough to say. One of the few FCS teams that do the football program makes pretty good money at their level, but they definitely recognize that, say, like if the Mountain West came calling,
right?
I don't think they would turn down. I think they would jump at it. Now, you know, we've had the Sun Belt knocking on our door, and of course the formerly failed WAC conference. They're not going to get in something like that, but I think it'd be pretty darn hard if Mountain West came knocking to turn them down.
How often do you travel with the team, and are you coming to San Luis this weekend?
I'm not coming to town. I've got two friends that are going to be there, though. I've got a friend who lives in Sacramento and a friend who's going to be flying down. You know, I used to travel to two or three every year, but I got three kids now. So it's tougher to travel the games with the kiddos, and it's You guys are tricky to get to. So,
yeah, slow's not easy. Yeah. I was you know, we hosted a baseball regional last year here in San Luis Obispo with Cal Poly, and their team was, you know, a top, you know, 5, 10, 15 team all year, and ended up doing that for the first time. And you know, you kind of think about what does it take to get a team here, even for, you know, a non-conference basketball game. You know, teams aren't really huge fans when they can go to LA and have five options for schools in that conference. They can go to the Bay Area and have an option for a school in that conference with Davis. You know, it's a really kind of an in-between place. You're right. It's not super easy to get to, but once you do, it's kind of nice. Let your friends know if they want any tips on where to go and what to do. I'm happy to, you know, help them out on that level, for sure.
Cool.
Yeah. Okay. So anything else? I guess last question, who has to play really well, or what's kind of the key to Montana beating Cal Poly, on Saturday?
Yeah. So obviously I think I kind of hinted at the one thing, but I think the biggest key for Montana on offense is going to be if Jordan Johnson has time. He's shown that he's an incredibly smart, incredibly efficient quarterback. I think just one interception this whole season. He can beat you through the air. He can beat you with his feet. We've got a group of tall receivers and two great playmaking running backs. Jordan Canada is a bit of our workhorse. Trayvon Van, who is getting NFL looks. He was an SEC guy, but they wanted him playing cornerback, and so he came back to Montana. But it all comes down to if Jordan Johnson has time, and can make the throws, make the reads, and make the plays, then that's going to be the key on the offensive side. Interestingly enough, on the defensive side, in the first half of the season, Montana's defense is awesome swarming to the ball. like I've said, though, that not played a lot of triple option. That's going to come down to our three linebackers. We've got three brand new linebackers. The other three from last year that played in that game are all in the pros,
right,
in the NFL, one in the CFL. And these linebackers staying in their lanes, staying on assignment, not missing tackles, and saw a little bit of concern at the Davis game. They had a couple misses on some pretty easy shots. Could just be shaking off some rust, though. So I think giving Jordan Johnson time to play and the play of our linebackers is going to be the two biggest key factors for Montana.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome stuff. I'm really looking forward to the matchup. You know, I hope it's as good a game as it was last year. You know, as somebody who grew up in this area, I think, you know, I'm always envious of the kind of passion that other fan bases bring sometimes. We have a stadium that seats about 11,000. It'll be really interesting. It's parent and family weekend this weekend at Cal Poly. Next weekend is homecoming. So homecoming usually gets a good turnout. But parent and family weekend, you know, it'll be really interesting to see if a team that's won three in a row, you know, even though they had a really slow start, you know, brings out, you know, 10,000-11,000 fans, because we haven't had that yet this year. And it's definitely something, that I'm ready to see. We will have a sold out stadium in a couple of weekends, but that'll be for a soccer game on a Sunday. we sell out our stadium for the UC Santa Barbara soccer game. Just like you call them, what'd you say? Bozeman State, you said, a lot of people,
yeah, Bozeman State.
A lot of people, yeah, like to refer to Santa Barbara as, University of California, Goleta, you know, so, cause that's a little part of Santa Barbara that they're in. And so, you know, that's kind of a big rivalry there. And that'll be interesting to see, you know, in terms of average attendance. I always like to look at soccer. There are a few games that nobody comes to, but a lot of the soccer games at Cal Poly get pretty well attended. And I don't know if it splits the attendance, or if it's just, you know, a different group of kids that go for a different reason. But it's always kind of an interesting thing to see this time of the year with the UCSB game coming up down in Santa Barbara. You know, UC Santa Barbara draws about 13,000 or 14,000 usually for the Cal Poly game, and then they come down here and they sell out the stadium. Last year there were kids climbing the fences trying to get in. It's like a European soccer environment. It's kind of insane. And it kind of makes, as a football fan too, it makes me kind of scratch my head that if these guys are capable of this, you know, where are they on Saturdays? And so I'm definitely interested to see, you know, what that turnout's like, what the student turnout is like. They're expecting a lot of people, but you know, who's coming and when they're coming is definitely going to be important too, if Cal Poly thinks they're going to have any kind of home field advantage. Brent Wahlberg, hey, I really appreciate it. If you want to follow Brent, what's your Twitter handle, Brent?
It's just @BWahlberg.
@BWahlberg, and it's Brent with an I. So if you're in, yeah, Missoula and you need real estate, that's the guy to go to. You can find him on egrizz.com. Do you have a special handle on there? What's your egrizz handle?
Same thing, yeah. It's just BWahlberg.
It's just BWahlberg, okay.
Easy to find. Easy to find.
It's not like Get 'em Grizz or Go Grizz. I saw a bunch of guys that have Grizz in their handle on the
pretty straightforward for me.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool, man. Well, listen, looking forward to a great game. Thanks for joining us, and we'll definitely have to do this again sometime.
Cool, well, sounds good.
All right, Brent, take care.
Okay, see ya.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Fansmanship Podcast. For more podcasts and more in-depth sports discussion, go to fansmanship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in Trouble Town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Street lights so bright, they blind my vision. And the people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue. You lift me up, don't bring me down. You give your love to everyone around. You send me on my way to Trouble Town. I can't find my way around Trouble Town. Ooh.
edge of the night.